What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, my co-host, Corey Waldron, and special guest today, Taylor Griffin of SLC Dunk. What's up, fellas? How are we doing?
Hey, Taylor.
Doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Yep, Taylor, welcome to the pod. Nick, always a pleasure, and Utah Jazz.
Yes, we are talking Jazz, continuing the NBA Outlet preview series. As always, a quick reminder, you can find the show on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. Also, you want some OTG merch, head to DesignTree/OffTheGlass. Use discount code OTG5 to save yourself some money. But let's talk Utah Jazz. And before we talk next season, we'll look back at last year, 50-32, fifth in the Western Conference, first round loss to the Rockets. How would you summarize last season in one emoji, Taylor?
So last season, looking through the emojis, I think the one that I would probably say is most fitting is like the, it's not a happy face, it's not a sad face, it's a little flat smile face. Mm. And the reason I say that is because, you know, I think the Jazz had a successful season, you know, they eclipsed 50 wins and made it to the playoffs. But with the expectations and kind of think how things went, you know, getting bounced in the playoffs by the Rockets in five games and kind of getting embarrassed in a lot of the games, I don't think a lot of Jazz fans were happy with how the season turned out, you know, all things said. I don't think a lot of them were, like, super sad. It was just kind of like, meh, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
with considering everything, it just wasn't, like, a super inspiring thing. It was just kind of meh, I guess.
Yeah, my emoji follows suit. I have the shrug emoji. I mean, again, a solid Jazz season. They kind of took a bigger leap the year before, and it just kind of felt like a subpar season. Obviously, Donovan Mitchell was still very good, even though the numbers weren't great at times. Rudy Gobert's still a defensive player of the year. But it just there wasn't that next level that I was kind of anticipating for the Jazz to take going into last year.
Yeah, and I'll go with something along the same lines as you guys. I'll go with the emoji with just no mouth. It just has the eyes because there wasn't really a ton of emotion because the Jazz were a little bit better than the year before. But like you mentioned, Taylor, in the playoffs, you kind of expected a more competitive series with them and the Rockets because it's not like Houston was killing anybody, you know, all regular season. James Harden was on fire, but it just didn't really work out. So it's just kind of like a blah season where there was some positives, but by the end of it, you know, you're kind of left with a sour taste. But moving on to the biggest positive takeaway from last season, what do you got?
So the biggest positive takeaway from last season, I'm gonna say Rudy Gobert. Rudy, and it was disappointing for me that he didn't make the All-Star team. I mean, I get, you know, how things are going in the league, so it's difficult for him to make it. But he had an incredible year last year. You know, 16 points a game, 12 rebounds. Back-to-back defensive player of the year. So for him, honestly, it was the best season of his career and super encouraging for Jazz fans that, you know, he still continues to get better every year. And then we saw it, you know, in the FIBA tournament as well. But the biggest positive takeaway for me last season for the Jazz was Rudy Gobert's play. And I think that he's going to keep building on it. And it was awesome to see him play so well last year.
Yeah, I think the best positive takeaway is the fact that Rudy Gobert once again showed that he's the best rim protector in the NBA, well and above a guy like Miles Turner, who in FIBA they kind of reminded the league and reminded me in particular that Rudy Gobert is leaps and bounds better than Miles Turner at protecting the rim, you know, just dominating the paint on a night-in, night-out basis.
Yeah, no, you guys are right. Rudy Gobert was huge. I'm just going to go with something a little different. I'm going to go with post-All-Star break Donovan Mitchell, who was really good. I know he struggled earlier in the year, but then post-All-Star break, he really turned it on. Obviously, that's the type of flashes you want to see it from a young player. You'd like to see it more consistently throughout the whole year, but able to kind of showcase that, I think, was really positive. But obviously, Gobert was huge. But what would be the biggest negative takeaway for Utah last season?
So for me on this one, I went with Dante Exum.
Ooh, good one.
Exum, you know, young guy, just can't seem to get a break when it comes to staying healthy. And the reason that it was particularly disappointing last year is because he always seems to be, you know, right there about to make a turn and really start playing, you know, consistent basketball. And then he goes down with an injury. You know what I mean? And last year was really frustrating because he rolled his ankle pretty bad. So he had it was a sprained ankle. It developed into a bone bruise. He came back and played for a couple games, and then hurt his knee. And so it's like, it's literally just been one thing after another for him. And, you know, I always hope that these guys come back, and I really do hope that he can come back, but it's going to be tough for him to, with all these injuries that he's had just over the first couple of years of his young career. That was one thing that was really sad for me watching that go down last year. And I hope he can come back from it, but you just never know the mental toughness of these guys when they go through multiple injuries.
My negative takeaway was between not just one guy, but the fact that there wasn't a clear-cut number two option offensively for this team. Or it was Rudy, maybe, but there wasn't like a third guy. Joe Inglis was very consistent but didn't stand out. Ricky Rubio, once again, struggles offensively. Jay Crowder has struggled shooting since getting out of Boston. There wasn't just another guy who could take some of the offensive load off Donovan Mitchell, which is why this team obviously looked to gain a lot of offense this past offseason.
Yeah, that's a really great point, Corey. Obviously, they made some additions this year, which we'll talk about a little bit. And obviously, great point by Taylor. Dante Exum the year before in the playoffs, I mean, he put some clamps on James Harden for a couple plays and got everyone excited. It just sucks that he hasn't been able to stay healthy. One of the biggest negative takeaways, something we kind of hinted at earlier, was just that first-round playoff series. Kind of hoped a little bit more progression would come against the Rockets, and it really didn't. So that's always disappointing for a young and upcoming team. But talking about the Jazz for this season, they're ranked number 7 in the OTG power rankings. Do you guys think this is too high, too low, or fair?
I personally think that it's hard to say because there's so many good teams coming into this year. I think there's probably, you know, 7 teams that can realistically have a shot at winning a championship, the Jazz being one of them. So anywhere in the top 7, I feel like is pretty fair. I would probably put them a little bit higher, just because I think that, you know, the additions that they made are really going to set up a high probability that they succeed. And, but like I said, the top 7, just with all the, for the regular season at least, with all the load management, things like that between the different teams, I could see them finishing higher than a lot of teams that might be above them in the power rankings. But in terms of winning a championship, I think as long as they're in that mix, then that's cool with me.
Yeah, I think 7 is fair. I think you could have them a couple spots higher. This is a team that has put themselves, as Taylor mentioned, in position to be one of the 6 or 7 teams competing for an NBA title. So I think 7 is fair.
Yeah, you guys are spot on. I think there is an argument maybe for jumping over a team like Houston or something like that. And the only reason I think 7 is probably where the staff put them is because there are some question marks because you're trying to fit in a lot of new pieces. But if those pieces work out, they could definitely be one of the top contenders in the West. Now, moving on to the offseason, not necessarily a ton of draft hype. They drafted a couple of guys in the late second round.
Yeah, so the draft was kind of an afterthought for the Jazz this year just because they did so much in free agency. You know, they used their first-round pick to trade for Mike Conley. So the draft was kind of like not a letdown, but, you know, they just didn't have the picks. But I will say that I was pretty impressed with Mie Oni. He came in. He was actually the last guy that the Jazz drafted at 58 and came in, had a really good summer league. He must have impressed a lot of the management guys on the Jazz because he's right there in the mix for the roster. And I feel like I was watching some of his college highlights, and the guy can score, he can shoot. He's got a long wingspan. It's almost 7-foot wingspan. So he's a guy that, you know, Jazz fans are familiar with this, but Dennis Lindsay's kind of made a name for himself with finding guys, whether it be late in the first round, like Rudy Gobert, or, you know, guys like Royce O'Neal that don't get drafted, but he finds these guys that, you know, don't have a lot of hype initially, but he finds these guys that want to work and that, you know, can start making names for themselves. So I'm interested to see where these guys play out. The draft was an afterthought. So any success these guys have is a major plus.
Most likely G League time for these guys this year, you would say?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I'd say that's probably where you're going to see most of these guys.
Corey, anything you want to throw in there or just move on to free agency?
Move on to free agency.
All right. Like Taylor and Corey's mentioned, you know, it was a big free agency. Players they brought in either signing or trades. Mike Conley, Bojan Bogdanovic, Jeff Green, Emmanuel Mudiay, and Ed Davis. What was your favorite move out of this bunch?
Man, it was such a busy offseason for Jazz fans, and something that we're not we're not like completely used to this. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like it was one thing after another.
Once I mean, they've had a couple off seasons where they haven't even signed anybody, right?
Right. Well, it's just because they, you know, obviously Utah's not like a major free agency destination, yep. But, you know, we're not used to seeing these guys come in here. But I think for me, probably what most Jazz fans and people that watch the Jazz are most excited for was the Mike Conley trade. Conley's so good, and it seems like he fits so well in Utah, just with the organization and the players, and he's just a really good basketball player. So I'm most excited about Conley, just because I think that he ultimately adds the, you know, more wins and more success out of the other guys that the Jazz signed.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Conley is, I think, the best asset they added, clear cut. But I'm going to go in a different direction just for the sake of being different. And I'm going to say Ed Davis. I think getting rid of Favors and having a backup center or backup four, whatever you want to consider Ed Davis, in the small ball era, he plays backup center. A hustle guy, a guy who will battle for boards. Obviously, Nick Washington in Brooklyn, I know he was one of Nick's favorite guys to watch, always hustling. And he's going to fit the role of playing behind Rudy Gobert and just doing the dirty work for this Jazz team. He's been loved everywhere he's gone. Another guy that can fit right into the locker room. Ed Davis, to me, was a really good signing.
Yeah, it was just like an array of a lot of really good moves. And you guys mentioned, you know, Mike Conley obviously comes over and he's a piece that feels like he's going to fit right in. You add Bojan Bogdanović, gives you some offensive pop. Then Emmanuel Mudiay and Jeff Green give you some depth. And, you know, Ed Davis has consistently been one of the best backup centers. And like Corey mentioned, he brought a lot of toughness to Brooklyn, but also a really good locker room guy and somebody where you're going to bring him off the bench and you can guarantee he's going to give you the same effort night in and night out. But anything else on the additions that you guys want to touch on?
Yeah, I just want to kind of build on what you were saying about Bogdanović. Obviously, Mike Conley, like, that trade kind of got all the hype, you know what I mean? But I honestly feel like the Bogdanović signing was just as critical. You know, he's kind of a guy that's always kind of been under the radar, but had, you know, career season last year. And I think that he's going to be a super important piece of the Jazz success just because he's so consistent, you know what I mean? I feel like that's one thing that the Jazz lacked in prior years, and it showed in the playoff time, is they just lacked consistent scoring. You know what I mean? And Bogdanović is a guy that, like, a true average of, you know, 17 or 18 points a game. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to get crazy and get up in the 30s or, you know, but there's also not going to be nights when he scores, you know, lays an egg of 8 points or something like that. He's just like a true, you know, that you're going to get 15 to 18 points out of them, and that's going to be so, so important for the Jazz.
Yeah, and something they really could use last season. Corey, how do you think it's going to translate over to Utah? Obviously, you know, the Pacers used him almost as a number one option. Do you think he's going to even put up more efficient numbers now, being probably a third option in Utah?
I would expect a boost in efficiency for sure. You know, obviously last year averaged 18 points per game on shooting splits of 49, 42, and shot 80% from the free throw line. All good numbers, has proven that he's an above average defender because he works at it, puts in the effort, uses his body. Offensively, you put him alongside more scoring. I mean, remember, he put up these numbers last year of 18, of 49, 42, and 80 as the number one option for this Pacers team at Oladipo, missing majority of the time. And again, weren't a lot of offensive weapons alongside of him, so he was getting a lot of the defensive focus point on him during games. Now with these weapons, Bogdanović is in the best situation since he's kind of peaked into this, you know, one of the better elite scoring wings in this league.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely the best situation probably of his career in terms of talent on the roster. You know, maybe if the Pacers were fully healthy last year, you could make an argument. But it will be interesting to see how he kind of fits in Utah, and he could be that offensive punch that they really have needed. But talking about departing players, Ricky Rubio, Derek Favors, Crowder, Korver, Grayson Allen, Neto, Udo, Seth Alosha, out of these guys, who do you wish they were able to retain or keep?
So with all the, like, the excitement and the hype of all the guys coming in this summer, it was also kind of a bittersweet feeling for a lot of Jazz fans because the guys that they had to let go were guys that were like core guys that really meant a lot to the Jazz the last couple of years, especially Derek Favors. Favors was a guy that just came in and just got stuff done without, you know, there was no drama, very little, you know, extracurricular stuff that was, you know, might have caused distractions, things like that. He was just a guy that came in and just played and was a super solid dude. So I think Favors is the guy that it's probably going to be the hardest to let go of, and also a super great basketball player. But it's kind of the same thing on a smaller scale with Ricky Rubio. He was a guy that Jazz fans really connected with, especially myself. I like literally fell in love with Ricky Rubio when he was when he was on the Jazz, and I'll always love Ricky, you know, wherever he goes now, because he was like just a super. He plays with such passion that it was so. I just enjoyed watching him play so much. But and then kind of the same thing with Crowder and Korver, just these guys that, you know, they meant a lot to the Jazz just in their roles that they had. So it was kind of hard because everybody, you know, you kind of have to let go of the things that that, you know, are hard to let go of in order to get higher success and things like that. So I don't think the Jazz sacrificed. I think they'll still be able to find that same type of chemistry and things with the players that they have, but it was kind of hard to see these guys go this summer.
Yeah, I don't think you really miss any of these guys along the same lines of what you were saying, Taylor. The fact that you're going to see more success, simple as that, or at least you're expecting to. I think you miss Favors the most, though, talent-wise, only because he was a really good safety net to have in case anything happened to Rudy Gobert. Obviously, them playing at the same time didn't work out, but as a backup center, you know, Derek Favors is just an extremely good player in this league.
Yeah, obviously Favors is a talented guy. I think Jay Crowder is also a guy that probably could have fit really nice with his roster, just, you know, being a contending team, having one of those hustle guys, one of those guys with a little grit like Jay Crowder is always good. But moving on to next season, what's the biggest X factor for the Jazz?
So as a unit, I would probably say depth. You know, the Jazz added a lot of, you know, they with the Conley and the Bogdanovich, and the other players that they added, but they lost a lot of these guys that kind of provided that depth. You mentioned the Jay Crowder and the Korver. So, you know, outside of the Jazz starting five, I'm interested to see how the rest of the guys play. And I think that could also be an X factor as far as, you know, if the bench is going to be able to play really well, you know, including Dante X himself, then that'll go a long way for the Jazz as well.
My biggest X factor, I think chemistry is an easy one, but I want to mention chemistry. Obviously adding in all these new pieces, what guys take a back seat, maybe what guys, take on a bigger role. How do guys gel? I think that all matters, of course, but I'm going to say Quinn Snyder, as my X factor, because I think we know Quinn Snyder as the defensive minded guy he is. To the Utah Jazz year in and year out, have been one of the better defensive teams in the league. Now having offensive weapons, how does he orchestrate the offense through Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell? And now having all of these, you know, not bigger name, they're all well ego guys, but bigger name players, how does he play with the minutes? So I think Quinn Snyder is an interesting component of this.
Yeah, that's a really good pick. I think I'm going to go with the easy one. I think just fitting in all these new pieces and guys kind of taking on new roles and trying to get that cohesion by the end of the season, so when the postseason comes, you can really be a force to be reckoned with. But what's the starting lineup going to be on opening night?
Man, that's a good question. With all the different pieces the Jazz added, I think for me the preferable lineup would be Conley, Mitchell, Ingles, Bogdanovich, and Rudy Gobert. For me, that's what I would probably prefer, but I've seen a lot of people that are saying maybe Bogdanovich starts at the three and Jeff Green at the four, or you start, you know, Royce O'Neal at the four. So I think there's some flexibility at that three and four spot that they might switch up depending on Joe Ingles and his you know, availability after a long summer in FIBA and things like that, and he's getting older. So I'm not sure what they're going to do, but I'm excited to see how they mesh that starting unit and then who comes off the bench. But I would think that the starting lineup game one would be Conley, Mitchell, Ingles, Bogdanovich, and Gobert.
I had the same starting five, but I had as a secondary option, because I do think there's a chance that Joe Ingles is better served off the bench as a six man, where Royce O'Neal would play the small ball four. And then Bogdanovich would play the three.
Yeah, I don't mind that either. I really like Royce O'Neal. He's probably one of my like favorite role players in the NBA that no one really talks about. But I see Conley, Mitchell, Boyan, Ingles, and Gobert as probably the most likely one. But who knows? You know, Quinn Snyder could be flexible and adjusted on different basis depending on who they're matching up with. But other than Donovan Mitchell, who would be a player to watch for the Jazz?
So I think who's going to be a fun player to watch this year is Royce O'Neal. And
perfect segue.
Yeah, I know, right? He's on his final year of his contract. He'll be a free agent next year. But I'm interested to see where his game goes this year. He's already kind of made a name for himself a little bit as far as like his defense, and he actually played a pretty good playoff series last year against the Rockets. But I'm interested to see how much better he can get this year, and how he kind of fits into the rotation now that they have a couple more guys that can play his similar role with Jeff Green and Bogdanovich. So Royce O'Neal's the guy that I'm going to be paying close attention to this year to see how he plays.
Yeah, for me, the guy I'm watching is Mike Conley. Obviously, Mike Conley has been in the league for 12 plus years now, has playoff experience. But now Mike Conley is back in the limelight. Obviously, the last several years in Memphis, they haven't been playing for anything. Now he's back on a team that's contending. He's in one of the best positions he's been in, arguably, in his career. And now it's time to see if he can get over the hump. How far can this Jazz team go? Is Mike Conley over the hump himself personally? Is he still right in the prime of his career? What does he have left? I think Mike Conley is an interesting guy for this team.
Yeah, I like Mike Conley as well, and I think he could really be the game breaker. Obviously, expecting Donovan Mitchell to take a jump and get better this year, but Mike Conley, like Corey mentioned, you know, he hasn't necessarily played meaningful games in Memphis in a little bit, and they haven't necessarily been contenders in years. So now it's like, all right, I'm in Utah, and we have a real shot to be a contender in the West this season. What type of performance are we going to see from Mike Conley? Especially, he's dealt with some injuries over the last couple seasons, obviously getting up there in age. But what's worst case scenario for the Jazz next season?
So worst case scenario, assuming, you know, all players stay healthy and everything like that, and there's no major injuries. If everybody stays healthy, I think the worst case scenario is a first round playoff loss. Just because there's so much hype for the Jazz this year, bringing all these guys in, and it would be a pretty big disappointment if they were to just get bounced from the playoffs in the first round like last year. So I think that's a pretty, you know, semi-high floor for the Jazz. But I really do think that if they can't get out of the first round of the playoffs, and even the second, if everybody stays healthy, then I think that's a pretty, pretty bad scenario.
Yeah, my worst-case scenario was another first-round exit. Like you mentioned, Taylor, you added in this talent. The expectation has to be, you know, second round and beyond. So I think worst case scenario would be, a sixth seed in the West, and then you're bouncing the first round.
Yeah, I'm pretty similar to you guys. You know, you don't land home court and you get knocked out in the first round, and these new pieces don't really gel. It maybe takes longer than one season. But what's the best case scenario for the Jazz?
So I think the best case scenario for the Jazz this year, it's pretty simple. It's an NBA championship. I think they finally gotten to the point with the personnel that they have and the different players and moves they made, that it's, you know, a semi-realistic thing that the Jazz can win a championship this year, which in years past has not been the case. I mean, this is the first time in a long time that, you know, saying the Jazz winning the championship and people aren't giving you like a crazy look, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's actually like it could happen. And like I said, Vegas has them as like a top seven team as far as odds go. So it's like, it's a real thing, and I, like I said, if Donovan Mitchell can make that jump, there's absolutely no reason why the Jazz winning a championship shouldn't be the best case scenario for these guys.
Yeah, best case scenario is an NBA title. I also think regular season wise, that's 65 wins as the best case scenario. I think there is a world where that can happen, and yeah.
Yeah, I think Jazz definitely can land the number one seed. I'm like caught in between. I like, part of me believes the Jazz can win a championship, and then part of me is like, who is that top player that pushes them ahead of a team like the Lakers or the Clippers in a playoff series? So my ceiling is almost the finals. It's like almost in between Western Conference Finals and the NBA Finals. I'm not fully convinced yet. Obviously, the West is extremely talented, but if the pieces gel, it's a real possibility. What would be your actual prediction on the season, and where will they finish in the division?
So I'm gonna say 53 wins, which is pretty, you know, obviously pretty conservative. But I just think the West is gonna be
tough,
just like it has been the last couple of years. Just tough, man. Yeah, like you know, you're going against superstars almost every single night when you play a Western Conference team. But I think 53 to 55 wins, and I think it'll be pretty even in the West as far as record go. Like, I don't think anybody's gonna jump up to be, you know, 60 plus wins or anything like that. So I think 53 wins, that'll get them a first round or for home court in the first round, and that's enough for them to push them to the Western Conference Finals. My prediction is that they make it to the Western Conference Finals and then get beat out by the Clippers. So that's what I'm going with, and I can already feel the heartbreak.
I was gonna say, you're setting yourself up for some heartbreak. Corey, what do you got?
My actual prediction is 54 wins.
Same as me.
Yeah, I think this team is going to be really good this year. I'm really intrigued to watch them.
I got them finishing second in the division. I do have a
second. Oh, yeah, second in the division too. My bad.
And a second round exit. I'm sorry, Cello. I don't have them in the Western Conference Finals. I think it's possible, but I'm just favoring the Stars
right
now. Corey, what are you thinking playoff wise?
I haven't locked in my things yet because I have them as contenders to the Western Conference Finals. I haven't ruled out the Lakers or Clippers yet.
All right. Where would you rank the Jazz on League Pass 1 through?
I think, you know, with all the different pieces that they brought in, you know, the Jazz for the last couple of years, I think, have been like a pretty popular team on League Pass just because, you know, Donovan Mitchell exploded as a rookie and he's a really fun player to watch. So I think that they've been like in the top 10 probably in the last 2 years. And I think it'll stay the same. I don't think they're going to be like the most popular team. I would say probably like number 9. And I think there's still some, you know, small market bias and things like that that might keep people from watching them. But I would say number 9 on the league pass rating.
How would you rate them 1 through 10? Like if you were doing it on a scale 1 to 10?
Oh, 1 to 10. Sorry. That's actually what I was trying to say. 9 out of 10. That's what I meant.
Yeah, I give him a 9.5. I'm a guy who likes defensive minded teams, players. I'm a defensive first kind of guy. The Jazz fit that profile. They've added guys to boost the offense. I like Bogdanovich. I got to watch him in Indiana the last couple of years. He's fun. Donovan Mitchell has gotten a ton of excitement and intriguement. Ingles is a showman. Gobert's dominant. This team has a lot of, you know, watchability in my eyes.
Yeah, I'm only giving them an 8, and that's not just because I don't think the Jazz are fun to watch. I just think that there's so many other great teams, so I have to be realistic. I can't be giving out, like, 9s and 9.5s every show. But TV show comparison, this can be based off of watchability or based off of the plot.
So I'm going to go with Breaking Bad. And this might be kind of a reach. I don't even know if it'll really make sense, but this is what I was thinking. So obviously in Breaking Bad, like Walter has to, you know, get out of his normal good boy mentality to provide for his family, right? So the Jazz kind of had to do a similar thing this offseason. They had to kind of break some of the ties with the guys that fans really loved and were important to the franchise. So they had to break free from that, you know, the chemistry, so that they could, you know, get to the top, and they bring in all these other guys. And so I think the sacrifices that they made, you know, hopefully the Jazz success is a little more wholesome than like Walter White's success, less killing, less drugs, whatever. But I think I don't even know if that makes sense, but that's
no, I feel you on that. They need to kind of change their mentality so they can take that next step. And Walter White had to do the same thing. What do you got, Corey?
For me, I'm finally using Narcos.
Ooh.
Good show, and I mean, I get the Jazz don't really, not that anybody, I think, on this team is a narco, but they have that defensive-minded edge. They're a team you just don't want to mess with. We know the Utah Jazz fan base are really aggressive and supportive of their team, and that's it. It's a good show, too. That, it wasn't the greatest of comparisons this time around.
Yeah, I didn't go with a great comparison either. I went with the following. That's based off of more watchability, but the main character, Kevin Bacon, is the show. And I think the key for the Jets this season, like Taylor mentioned earlier, is going to be Donovan Mitchell and the jump that he can take to kind of be that closer when they're in one of these playoff series against one of these top teams if they really want to make it to the NBA Finals. But Taylor, pleasure having you on. Tell everyone where they can find you on Twitter and find your work.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me on, guys. You can follow me on Twitter at GriffDunk. You can also find my some writing, some other things that I do at slcdunk.com, which is the Utah Jazz SB Nation blog. You can follow me on Twitter, follow SLC Dunk on Twitter as well, so that you don't miss out anything Jazz this year. But yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Our Taylor, pleasure. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at KWAL Hoops, KWAL Hoops. And keep checking out the OTG Top 50. They're starting to get some good debates on them.
Yeah, Corey's going to catch some heat for today's pick. But you can find OTG on Twitter at OTG Basketball. Also find the website, otgbasketball.com. Like Corey mentioned, we got the Top 50, the Higher Fire Series. We got team previews, a lot of stuff dropping throughout before the season starts. But always a pleasure. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play, Dash Radio, YouTube, and obviously OTG.
Peace out, knuckleheads.